Apologies for being a minute or two late. We were meeting with our respective members of the Writers Advisory Council and getting to know them better, and it was, I think, a useful exchange. Are there questions, comments on the agenda for the meeting? And hearing none, we'll work off that agenda. This is the month in which we devote our full attention to the security side. Chief Taborn is here to talk with us. Let me also ask for a motion to approve the minutes of the prior meeting.
Second.
Any questions, comments on the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are adopted. And as our usual practice, we'll open with a safety message.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee. Recognizing that September is National Preparedness Month and that the focus is on emergencies and addressing emergencies on the job, there's also a concern about how do you address emergencies at home. And so what I'm going to talk about today is being prepared at home. Who would be available to take the responsibility of your children? Who would be there to handle any elderly parents? Do you have a developed a household emergency contact plan? So in the event of an emergency, I think that we should all practice and have those plans readily available so that we can act accordingly. There are various publications that are out there in the transit sector, and the National Transit Institute out of Rutgers, which was funded by FTA, put out a transit employees being prepared on the job and at home. And I think it's a publication that's well worth sharing with the transit employees, of which several years ago we provided, but it has a lot of valuable information. And so we should make a concerted effort to have a plan that we can implement in the event that we have a hurricane or earthquake or anything like that. So that's my safety contact. And thanks for you for asking me, and thanks for Jim Daugherty to allow me to give this safety contact. Okay.
Hey, thank you, Chief. I'll turn it over to you now for the security report, quarterly report.
Okay. First of all, sir, we've been in contact with the FBI, Joint Terrorism Task Force, and the area jurisdictional law enforcement agencies for the weeks building up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11 and after. We recently, just as recent as Tuesday, had a conference call. Right now, there is no specific threat to mass transit. There's no specific credible threat to the Washington area, even though information came that identified New York and Washington. The recommendations is that we always remain ever vigilant for any suspicious activity, and we encourage our employees and our police officers. And again, I can't say enough about the 40 federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies in this area that assisted WMATA in making sure that that presence was updated. Last night we had the privilege of meeting.
Did that include a lot of uniform presence?
Absolutely. And that's still in place in many of the jurisdictions. So you'll see interest is to the District of Columbia, the presence of the Metropolitan Police Department vehicles and things of that nature. Last night we had the privilege of meeting before the Riders Advisory Council, and we had the opportunity, the police department, to talk about the duties, roles, and responsibilities that we have, how we're doing in addressing crimes. We talked about initiatives and things that we're working in the community to improve the safety and security for our patrons and our employees in the Washington Metro. We entertained questions. There were a lot of great questions that came about. Dan Stessel was there from WMATA. We also had various members of the leadership of the Metro Transit Police there. And we thought that it was a very productive meeting. It went probably 2 hours long.
Excellent.
Okay. We are also prepared to address some issues that came up at a prior customer operations meeting that talked about bus security, and we'll be able to talk about that extensively. However, today the security report will reflect the second quarter of calendar year 2011. And so as you can see, the calls to service have increased roughly to about 16,427, and that's approximately a 5% increase over the first quarter of 2011. The arrests have gone down considerably because we've been focusing on uniform presence and being in various locations throughout the system. The citations have increased. We have written a considerable number of citations for the public ordinance violations, the eating, drinking, and smoking violations, and that has increased for the second quarter. Bus operator assaults have gone down. We had 11. We would wish that we had none. I have a breakdown of some of the types of bus operators' assaults. They are the spitting type, the throwing of trash, and things of that nature. We had a couple that involved the presence of a gun, but we have a breakdown of that as well. The probability of being a victim of a crime here in Metro is for every 1 million passengers, roughly 5.75, and that's in the Metro Rail. The next slide is a comparison by mode and location, the first being Part 1 crimes on Metro Bus. And one would say that through the efforts of a variety of different people, working with the bus divisions, working with 689, working with the police officers, crime on buses have gone down almost 47%. And so that's reflected in the statistics. Part 1 crimes in parking lots. Decreased by about 45% as well over the same period of time. And I think that's reflective of the partnerships with the respective local jurisdictions. We, back in April, the general manager brought together 17 of the area law enforcement leaders, asking them to assist WMATA wherever possible, talking about the various locations in our jurisdictions that we have problems. Primarily, those problems were centered around our parking facilities, which makes up the majority of the crimes here in WMATA. And through those efforts, we also shared with them smart trip cards that would afford them the opportunity to patrol randomly our parking lots. In the presence of additional resources, we believe has reduced the crimes in our parking facilities.
Question, I'm kind of jumping out of here a little bit, but back to the assaults on bus operators. I read that we do have aggravated assaults on the next page going up. Are the bus operator assaults in that category?
They fall into that category as well as assaults on police officers, so it's a combination of that. I have the list of aggravated assaults that fall into that category. We consider the assault with a deadly weapon that took place April 30th as one of those aggravated assaults. We had another incident on June 7th where six suspects boarded a bus and beat the bus operator, so that would fall into the category of an aggravated assault. We also had an aggravated assault on June 26th where a vehicle pulled alongside a bus. A passenger in the vehicle sprayed pepper spray on the bus operator, and the vehicle drove away. We put that in the category of aggravated assault as well.
So out of the 34 for this period, 11 were the bus operator assaults?
Yes, sir.
So about a third or so of the assaults were on bus operators.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What routes were they on, and are you redeploying?
A variety of routes. Most of our assaults and crimes on the bus is in the southeast quadrant of the city, and that is where we concentrate the majority of our efforts in the area of Martin Luther King. We have those particular routes identified, and we discuss those every 2 weeks at what we call our Metro Stat that specifically identifies those locations, the times of days, the routes specifically, and we deploy our people accordingly.
Thank you, Chief. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman. Chief, I appreciate this very much, and I really like looking at trends, so I'm delighted that we're doing this in the quarter. I was interested to hear you say that Metro bus crime is down 47%, same with parking lot crime, 45%. When I was reading through the report, though, I was puzzled by significantly below, well below, on par, that those are our value judgment words as opposed to the data. So I would really appreciate it, especially because we didn't this time get the data to back it up so I could go in and look. If next time we could actually have the percentages in the report, that would be helpful. And getting to Metro Rail crime, when I look at the little the trend lines in my presentation, it looks to me like Metro Rail is up about as much as Metro Bus is down. just by the diagram that's here. So perhaps you can tell us what the percent, you know, what the change is in Metro Rail.
Metro Rail crime is down for this quarter roughly about 5%.
About 5%.
If you look at crime across the entire system, crime is down roughly 17% in comparison to last year this time, or so for the half of the year. And we attribute that to a variety of different things: focus, strategies, partnerships, communications with our riding public, making them aware of the things that they can do to protect themselves. And so there's a variety of different reasons that we believe may have a result on the reduction of crime.
That's great. I just said the numbers would be very helpful in the future.
Okay. So the next slide is the Part 1 Crimes Against Persons, and it's broken down into a variety of different categories. Under the category of robbery, you see snatch, you see force and violence, you see armed, you see pickpocket, you see fear. And basically what we did was to give a comparison of this time period in last year compared to this. And where we say that there's no change, we reflect that. And in the category of aggravated assault, we show that there was an increase of 2 based upon the same time period last year.
Excuse me. Yes, what does the category fear mean? What
does that mean? Is that if you don't give me that iPod, I'm going to kick your butt, something to that effect, or you know, put your hands in your waist and imply that you have a weapon.
Okay.
And so what we also show when we talk about crimes against persons, we talk about the actions that we feel have resulted in reductions, whether it's realignment, the deployment of our officers to maximize visibility in the system, adjusted patrol locations to reflect where young people are gathering during the summer. I can say that this summer was better than last summer with regards to our youth disorder, and so we're pleased with that. And again, that's a continued partnership with the Metropolitan Police Department and our officers out there being present. A continued meeting with bus operators to inform bus security strategies and reduce the assaults. Working with Jack Requa in bus, we're looking at a variety of different innovative technology shields that will protect the bus operator in the event that he or she is assaulted. And so they're exploring 2 different prototypes of that, of which we can discuss later, should you wish. In the area of crimes against property, which makes up the majority of our crime, when you look at the parking facilities, we have 65,000 parking spaces that we sort of employ. And if you look at parking facilities across the regions at malls, things of that nature, that is where you have the crime of opportunity, when the bad person will see something that's of value and they'll smash the window and they'll pick something out. But what we have done in deploying strategies is the utilization of what we call our tower. Our tower is something that we place strategically out in the various bus location parking lots, and sometimes they're manned, sometimes they're not manned. It's a sort of tenant window, and we can use that as an observation booth. Again, with the partnership of the respective jurisdictional agencies, their random patrols through the parking lots has resulted in a reduction as well. And relative to the bicycles, which has been a problem, we have a lot of parking facilities. We're working with planning. We're working with various jurisdictions to look at ways that we can enhance and improve bicycle racks. We're looking at cameras. We're looking at the placement of those racks. We're looking at what is in place in the District of Columbia, which in my conversations with their police departments, they've had very few thefts from the various bicycle racks that are located throughout the city. And so we find that a lot of people will buy expensive bicycles but may not buy very inexpensive locks. And so we are working on brochures that we can share with our riding patrons to let them know that maybe you want to get a titanium steel lock to secure your bicycle. And what we're also finding is that when we see evidence that bicycles are abandoned, we sort of tag them for about 30 days, and we will take those bicycles away because we don't want to create the presence of abandoned vehicles or abandoned cars or anything on our property.
Mr. Chairman.
In terms of the bicycle thefts, whose responsibility is it to keep an eye on the bike racks? Is that part of the station manager's job?
No, it's primarily the transit police. I think the station managers have an enormous amount of responsibilities, and sometimes the placements of the bike racks are out of the view of the station. So I would not say that it's their responsibilities. I would say that it's the responsibility of all of the employees, but primarily transit police.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Johnny, Chief, I think this is a great idea to get the word out about what's needed to keep a bike safe when you're using it as part of the commuting. Are you working at all with WABA, the Washington Area Bicyclists Association? Do you know that group?
I don't know. I know we have a variety of different outreach efforts.
That's saying yes. Okay, great. Because their website is fabulous, and lots of the area bicyclists really pay attention to that. The other question I have is, when you remove bicycles you believe to be abandoned, mm-hmm. what do you do with them?
After a period of time, and if there's no way to get in contact with the owner, we destroy them.
Well, can I make an alternative suggestion? Mm-hmm. There are several groups that repurpose bicycles and ship them to third world countries to provide a and I think Bikes for the World is one. There's another. There's a couple. I suspect if we worked with them, they'd be happy to take them off our hands.
That's nice. That's it. We will definitely note that and get back in contact.
May I extend that to actually as well as at home? There are great programs
Absolutely.
That help young people really learn those kind of values by helping them to rebuild those bikes. So
that's right.
I'd be glad to connect with you.
Yeah, we have
a
group like that in Arlington as well. So.
And what's the name of that organization? Or?
I'm not going to be able to tell you, but I will get it to you. Yeah. With two high schools that you.
Right. And the program in Arlington is called Phoenix Bikes.
Chief, is it likely that the abandoned bicycle is actually a stolen bicycle?
I can't explain why a person would ride a bike to a metro facility unless they have been discouraged because they came back and it's all rusted and the wheel was missing. And so rather than contact the transit police and make a report or reporting it to their insurance company, they just leave it. But we do make a concerted effort to reach out to, whether possible, the identity of the owner of the bicycle. The next slide highlights the significant arrest, and I think we brought this before you previously, back last year, where we had a series of iPods being stolen and snatched off our patrons. We made some substantial arrests, and during the investigation of these suspects, they revealed that they, in turn, were fencing the items in Pentagon City and Potomac Mills Mall. We worked with Arlington County Police, Arlington County Sheriffs, the FBI, and we sort of set up sting operations where a variety of different iPhones and iPads and things of that nature were sold to these two different people at these locations. And I think the FBI continues that investigation to see if, in fact, they can get bigger players in this whole scheme. It's something that's happening all over the country at different transit agencies and even in the actual cities that people are snatching the iPhones. They get a good amount of money when they sell them and do things of that nature. We are hopeful that by eliminating the fencing that the reduction of snatches on the metro will go down. And so that's what we're seeing, but I can't absolutely attribute it to this particular arrest.
That was good police work.
The next slide, again, is talking about the future initiatives where we talk about the bicycle thefts, space on bike racks is up about 20%, and again, working in concert with Nat Bodenheimer and his group. We're looking at ways to enhance the security of the various bike racks and storage facilities, the placement of those, taken into account if, in fact, it's inside the station, if that creates a vulnerability for all of us. And so we're looking at a variety of different things. Next slide. This is a depiction of what is termed the TSA baseline based assessment and security enhancement review. This is a voluntary initiative that many of the top 50 transit agencies utilize as a way of finding out if, in fact, their agency is secure. This is also something that is in conjunction with the FTA 659 rule that talks about state safety oversight and those transit agencies that have some form of rail operations, and there's a security piece of that. And so to reduce audit fatigue, both the FTA and TSA agree that by utilizing this assessment, it would satisfy both of those requirements. And I can say that the Metro Transit Police probably by far is way ahead of most of your transit agencies across the country. And this is broken down into 17 different categories. Originally, it was 21, so it addresses everything that you can imagine. The frequency of emergency drills. Do you do background checks on your employees? Emergency preparedness. Do you have an emergency plan, a security plan? A variety of different things. Are you ready to, previously it was the Homeland Security Advisory system. Now it's something different, but are you ready to show that you have protective measures in place when the threat is elevated? So I applaud the efforts of the people on the Metro Transit Police who work diligently to do that. There's a combination of a variety of different things. A lot of this is a result of grants that we received over the years. Public awareness is an area that comes to light. The presence of public announcements throughout our system, the assessment that was done by TSA, they actually went out into the system to see and hear if, in fact, those announcements were made on a periodic basis. They looked to see if we had posters that made our employees and made our customers aware of what was going on. So this is a model in which many of the other transit agencies are seeking best practices and lessons learned from the things that we've employed here.
Chief, our overall score this time was 97%. What was the overall score last time?
Last time, I think it was probably in the category of about 91. Mm-hmm. It was still good. Areas that previously were red, it was how does an agency handle security-sensitive information? And they expected to see policies, they expect to see training that reflected that, and we were able to produce that this time. One of the other categories that was low was how are you teaching and educating your employees on what to do in the event of an emergency? And so funding was provided to us, and we are working with Dave Kubitschek and the entire Metro organization to provide free of charge. Backfill is paid for with these grants, and we're providing Metro Rail emergency training to all of our employees. And so to briefly talk about some of the issues relative to bus. Again, we are working diligently with the various bus divisions. We meet on a monthly basis, and we listen to the concerns that are coming from the various bus divisions. We address those issues, how to communicate with the transit police, the best way to let the police know if, in fact, there's an emergency. Working with Jack Requer, we developed that. Oftentimes, the bus operator will notify bus OCC and report that there's a crime. Well, we recommend that step is eliminated, that you go directly to the transit police. We will share the information with bus OCC because we want to get actions directly out to the bus operators. So there's a lot of great things that come out of the meetings with the bus operators. Initially, there was the feeling that the transit police did not support them, that the transit police would more be apt to come out to the scene and arrest them. And we sort of spent a lot of time saying that we arrest people based upon the crime and the elements of the crime, not because they're the bus operator. And we don't arbitrarily take one person's word against the other. And so there's a host of initiatives that continuously is done in all of our bus divisions. Again, we have, thanks to Deputy Chief Zielinski, we have what we call a high-intensity targeted enforcement where we combine uniformed police officers with plainclothes police officers, and they go out and they look at those areas that have traditionally been reported a high-crime area. The comments from the bus operators, you have a lot of police at Anacostia, but when you go two, three blocks away from Anacostia, those people need some police assistance. And so we do a considerable number of initiatives to support those types of things. and I'm open to any questions that you might have.
Questions for the chief?
Mr. Downey. Chief, just a real quick one. I'm so glad that you all are working on what bus operators should do when something begins to occur. I know that they can get to the operations center quickly because they're all linked. How do they get to you?
We get a relay of information. The call comes into bus operations control, and then bus operations control immediately notifies both us. We at the same time notify the transit police and the jurisdictional law enforcement agency. And in all probability, because we cover 1,500 square miles, the law enforcement agency in that jurisdiction will probably get there to assist our bus operators before we do.
And you said you'd like to change that, right?
Right.
So what would it look like if it was changed?
It would be the direct report to our police communications.
And does the bus operator have a way to do that?
Right now they have a couple of ways on the buses. They have what they call a silent alarm. They have a message system that's on the top of the bus that they can hit, help call police. And any jurisdictional law enforcement agencies patrolling that area will see that message and will respond to the bus. We also have a silent alarm that goes straight into bus OCC. The OCC notifies us as to where the bus should be. On the top of each bus, there's in bold numbers of the bus. In the event that we have to ask for assistance from either Fairfax or Park Police in getting the helicopter up, and we will respond until we make contact with that bus. Sometimes it's a false alarm, inadvertently hitting the alarm button.
Well, it seems to me if we want that to happen more seamlessly, the technology to make it work is part of the solution.
Because we have instructed the bus drivers not to have cell phones.
Right.
I have twice seen a bus with 9/11 emergency call police. Once parked in a bus bay at Friendship Heights without a bus operator. Mm-hmm. The other on the road, and after checking to make sure that there wasn't an emergency with the bus driver, he turned it off. It's so important about having credibility about the bus being lit up as an emergency. Is there not a panel light of some kind in the bus that if it is accidentally triggered, that it shows up and he knows that he's running with a 9/11 emergency alert?
Jack is here. He's the expert when it comes to the makeup.
Good morning. There are a couple different alarm buttons that operators can push. We can push a button to record, to turn on the drive cam so that it's actually recording. We have the emergency button, as the chief indicated, that calls, lights the call 911, call police, and that notifies bus OCC. The communication center, I don't know if it has a light. I do have to check that. But once central control gets an emergency alarm, the first thing they try to do is notify the operator to ensure that there is an event, while at the same time they're notifying the police, and we can cancel the call if the button was pushed by mistake. So, you know, it becomes top priority. The other thing is say to the chief that if there is an event, we're watching the bus on the screen, we can see that it's moving or not moving, going off route or whatever. So we know where the bus is going, so we can continuously update the police as to where the location is that they should be trying to get to. But I'm not sure whether there is a light or not. The other thing I can say, right. And on occasion, you know, they reach down and with all the different things we have, they may push the wrong button. The other thing I would add, from an input standpoint, the union obviously is very concerned about their members, and Chief Delinsky is in contact. We have a direct line between the union and the police and ourselves discussing where the areas of concentration ought to be. So all notifications of Jeff's team that he sends out are always notified to the union so that they're aware where they are going to be at a certain time.
You'll let us know about
that. I will let you know about the light.
Yeah. Other questions for the chief? Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The most important thing, I think, for us is safety and reliability.
Right.
And the least safe location impacts the whole system. And when you look at the information presented in four months tenure for me, so it hasn't been a long time, but our former board member, Betty Hewlett, the first and last thing she said to me is pay attention to the crime issues in our jurisdiction.
Right.
And, you know, I hesitate to begin to focus on my particular jurisdiction because we're here for the whole system.
Right.
But we have an acute issue.
Absolutely.
When 9 of the 10 are in our jurisdiction. So I'm interested in knowing what are the special initiatives in concert with our law enforcement to get a handle on what's happening in our jurisdiction.
Okay, as indicated earlier, the general manager urged me to bring together the 17 chiefs of police or their respective designees back in April. We did that with the understanding that working with Ms. Hewlett before and her efforts to get me connected with the chief, the former chief, as well as the current chief of police. That discussion took place. It was well received. We discussed every aspect of crime in the system. We went over many of the things that we talked about, and it doesn't change relative to the locations throughout our systems. We know where there are places that we traditionally have the highest influx of crime. And in context to that, that's where we pay the majority of our, put our majority of our resources. So it's not as if we're not paying attention to those locations, but it causes us to do something in addition to what we normally have been doing, and that was the outreach with Prince George's County Police Department, working collectively. We do a lot of outreach efforts. We go to the communities. We talk about the things that we can do to improve safety and security in and around those stations in Prince George's County. We've had the assistance of many of the county officers by way of the smart trip cards that we've given to them, and they patrol our lots. We also have conducted what we call a blue tide, which is something on a monthly basis, terrorist identification and deterrent effort, where we have the local police department marry up with the transit police, and they're at the station, something that over the course of the 35 years didn't happen that much. And so the general public sees the partnership efforts, and it's happening throughout the whole entire metropolitan area. And those are some of the things. We are also looking at closed-circuit TV cameras or loudspeaker monitors that we could possibly deploy at many of the parking facilities that periodically, in the presence of people walking through, messages can be shared. Last night, the discussion was the late-night travel in our parking lots and what we do. Oftentimes, we deploy a police vehicle at the outlining stations for the assurance of our customers to travel. And so we continuously look at ways that we can enhance and improve, but we do target those locations that traditionally have the majority of the crime, and we pay a considerable amount of efforts to those.
I guess I have to say that we've got to do some other things, and I'm not sure what they are, but I'm certainly committed to doing it, because our clients are afraid. And as I ride the train, and that's my stop, Largo, which has now become a Landover. And my husband rides every day, and he no longer goes to Largo. He goes down to Landover. So patterns are changing. And I don't think we're unique in that sense. So whether it's perception or reality, our clients are concerned about Largo, not bikes. But bodily harm is what we're talking, life-threatening kinds of things.
And what we have, contrary to, we've had some personal assaults, but the majority of the crime in and around those locations that are identified in Prince George's County are crimes against property, the breaking of the vehicles, the stealing of the vehicles, the stealing of money that's in the vehicle. Very few, if all, involve an actual physical assault against the person.
So, Chief, I know you and we know that.
Right.
But I'm saying our riding public,
true,
they don't make that distinction.
True.
And just this week, there was a news coverage of an incident in Largo. And, I mean, I did speak to the chief of police in Prince George's about it, but the person in that instance, the media said, well, Prince George's wasn't aware of it. So then I had a better understanding of how things are reported and when the local jurisdiction is alerted versus, you know, the Metro Police. I think it's an important issue we've got to get a handle on.
And it's done simultaneously because it's the first also on the scene. We have concurrent jurisdiction throughout the Washington metropolitan area. So our most important thing is getting a police officer to that scene. So whether it's Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Fairfax, Arlington, it is a dual notification when something like that happens. That particular call came out as an attempt carjacking. Investigation revealed that that was not the case. Contrary to what was reported on Channel 9, it was a theft that may very well have happened earlier during the day. And during the excitement, the person who came and found that his vehicle was broken into made the assumption that a vehicle that was parked behind them were the perpetrators. And no information, no context, no words were stated that, now I'm going to come and get you. And so we did a diligent job within 4 minutes, having the perimeter set up, K-9s, notification of Prince George's County, but there was no evidence of that particular category of crime.
I think you just answered the question. One question I was going to ask, and that is with respect to the police powers of the Metro Police. They are full police powers in every jurisdiction, both on-site and off-site of our property. And correct.
Well, we have jurisdictions, concurrent jurisdictions for property owned, controlled, or operated by the authority for crimes committed on to or against. In the case of bus stops, we have that jurisdictions within 150 feet of the 12,000 bus stops in the whole metropolitan area. So outside of property buildings, if you have a bus stop here and that building, that office building, we don't have jurisdiction in the office building, but 150 feet within the bus stop, we have jurisdiction.
So the police powers of the agency don't extend off of agency property. Is that what you're saying?
Unless it's the bus stops.
Unless it's the bus stops.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And then the last question would be with respect to our reports of crime and incidents of any sort. An incident is only counted if it is on agency property. So, for example, if a pedestrian is en route to a metro station and they are on a pathway that is off the property, how does that?
Not our jurisdiction. Okay. It falls upon the jurisdiction of that respective police agency. And oftentimes, we may be held accountable for crimes committed 2-3 blocks away from the metro station. But we work definitely in concert with our jurisdictional partners, because debating over who has responsibility is not something that we do. We recognize through our memorandums of understanding with the respective police agency who has what jurisdiction, and so that's clear. And as it relates to reporting, if that respective police department takes the report, then that is reportable under the Part 1 UCR. It's whoever actually takes the report.
But to the extent that we do not have police powers at an off-site, if an agency officer observes a criminal activity off-site, they are empowered to respond to that? What is their...
Well, we just take a normal police response. We may, if a person robs a liquor store, we will take the person in custody and turn them over to the jurisdictional police department. We will assist, just as other police agencies will assist us. Say, for instance, New Carrollton Police see something that's not on Metro's property but is in that particular area.
But you're empowered to act in those circumstances?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I understand that you are, you mentioned the memorandum of understanding with the local police agencies. I understand that in Montgomery County and perhaps other places, you're in the process of updating those memorandum of understanding, because I understand that there's been some concern on the part of Montgomery County Police about not getting notified immediately about things that happen in the county. So I guess the question is, where are you in the process of updating those MOUs, and what would the outcome be?
We are updating memorandums of understanding with all our respective jurisdictional law enforcement agencies. However, I haven't heard of them not being notified.
notified afterwards. They're not notified necessarily at the same time, I think, is the issue.
We do it simultaneously, because we know from a mathematical standpoint that when we cover 1,500 square miles, the probability is that the jurisdictional agency is going to get there a lot sooner than we are. And so we're not overzealous in thinking that we can travel around the beltway and get to a location. So we notify the jurisdictional agency at the same time.
And the updated MOU would reflect that, what you just said?
As far as timely notification, I don't even know if there's a category that speaks to simultaneous notification. It talks to concurrent jurisdictions, duties, roles, and responsibility. It talks about testifying in court. It talks about a variety of different things. But if that's something that we need to insert just to make sure that we're clear, we can do that.
Okay.
I just want to add, when we met with all the police chiefs, that was never raised as a concern by any of them from all the jurisdictions. So if there is a concern, I would suggest the chief talk with the chief over there and they work that out.
Okay, well, let me clarify and I will get back to you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank Ms. Hampshire-Kong for raising the question, because one of the things that all of this talks about is one, safety specifically, and transit safety, and the relationship of transit safety to the jurisdictional aspect of safety. And I wanted to hear if you can share how your communications as the chief safety officer in communications and our media work in order to convey messages as best and in a timely way, but also in a clear way, as best you have information about what's happening. Because too often we hear transit's not safe. And you say, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? And so getting the information that's clear of where the problem is, what the problem is, what information is credible right now, and how you want to share it versus how it can get shared.
I think the two people that I have on automatic speed dial when it comes to anything happening is Mr. Sauls and Dan Stessel. We want to make sure so he, in turn, can make you all aware of exactly what's going on, the status, the updates, the level of seriousness of any incident. So if it rises to that level, we notify the general manager. I tell my people that that's the process. So oftentimes when they do a police communication update, more often than not, I will forward that update to the general manager and Dan Stessel, so they know exactly from the person that's on the scene exactly what's happening, similar to an event that we had this morning. There's always something that's happening, and we make a concerted effort to make the leadership, because I guarantee you, if we don't, that's too bad. It's trouble.
And I think the larger part is once it leaves Mr. Stessel, so that we can keep our communication lines open,
right,
to ensure that the information that's shared, right, is as much up to date and clarity. And I worry about clarity sometimes in that.
Relative to security or what information that we can share, if it's of a criminal nature that involves safety of our patrons, then as much as can be relayed will be relayed as to precautionary measures that our patrons will take in traveling in the metro. There are some informations that we cannot reveal, but we will let them know exactly what we can, and that's consistent with any law enforcement agency in the National Capital Region.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you for your presentation, and forgive me if I missed this as you started, but I'm reminded as school starts that a lot of the concerns that many people have related to transit involve our children traveling from school, well, both ways, actually, to school and from school, and I think some of the uneasiness that people feel when they feel unsafe on trains oftentimes is boisterousness and rowdiness and other unacceptable behavior on the train by children. And I want to know what, if any, new initiatives you have around this issue as it relates to the bus and train, but also the stations themselves.
Okay. We have for many, many years worked in concert with Metropolitan Police and the D.C. public school system. As a matter of fact, we have a 1 o'clock conference call every day to discuss the goings-on in the public school, the charter schools, parochial schools, because we are the, as you well know, the bus for the D.C. public schools. So it's incumbent upon us to find out where there's a possibility that there's going to be a fight, whether it's in a particular quadrant of the city, and so we work in concert, and that in and of itself takes up a lot of personnel, because we want to make sure that the young people are protected, that if we find that there's going to be a fight between one neighborhood group and the other, we have to deploy our people effectively. What that does, it sort of drains the personnel, because, you know, we may not have the ability to have our police officers patrolling the trains, the stations, the parking lots, because we're dedicating our resources to the mass volume of school kids, whether that's at Minnesota Avenue, Van Ness, Tinley Town, and we follow them. It's not just at that location. When they enter in the subway, they travel throughout on the train. So it's a combination of following the young people to points that they can disperse. We know that Gallery Place, we know that Metro Center, we know that LaFont Plaza are places that young people assemble. We also know that they're outlining locations, Minnesota Avenue, Deanwood, that there's an assembly of people, because we have a variety of different buses. So it's a daily sort of act of making sure that looking at Metrostat and where we have crimes, calls for assistance and disturbance, that we deploy our people appropriately. And again, we encourage the partnership with our jurisdictional police departments, and we do have that working relationship with the Metropolitan Police Department.
Thank you.
Chief, Ms. Bowser's question reminds me of a topic we've talked about in the past, and that is whether we have explored or whether we it's feasible to consider auxiliary groups, perhaps volunteer groups or other types of retired police officers or military staff or others who might play a role of vigilance that is more cost-effective but gets a more visible presence in some of the areas where we have potential for difficulty. Have we moved into those directions, or is it feasible to look at that, or do you know of areas where communities where that's been successful?
Yes, we have been looking at that. On the Commonwealth side, it's usually a same type of training program that your traditional police officers go through. So the uniforms, the training, it's done by the Department of Criminal Justice Services in Virginia that oversees all training, whether it's a sworn police officer or an auxiliary police officer. We know that in the District of Columbia, there are programs that are in place that bring volunteers in to do work. We know that there are other jurisdictions that they utilize the Explorers concept, whether, you know, training young people to act as traffic monitors, things of that nature. That is something that we're looking at. We have a pilot program that's going on now that's an Explorers. But the liability, working with council, working with everybody, we have to come up with a level of understanding as to exactly what it is that we would require these people to do, because we're not going to put them in harm's way. And if we have to train them, and then that's an additional financial impact on us. And so we're looking at those.
Can you talk just very briefly about what that Explorer program pilot does?
Well, the National Explorers program is something that's all over the country that brings young people who you may have a focus on public safety, police. And so these are people that may be the future law enforcement you know, officers in the country, and it provides them with handcuffing, traffic, all of the things that you would find in a traditional police department, and it's a valuable resource that they can, whether it's at Metro Center, providing directions. We at Metro have Metro information persons, but they could conceivably be that type of person. Last night, the discussion with the Ridership Advisory Council talked about within the D.C. public schools getting monitors to be at these locations, because the students would know that this person represents this particular school. So it is something that we have to explore to see if, in fact, there is a possibility that we can sort of bring together the community and all of the respective jurisdictions to come up with a way that we can have a greater uniform presence. And so that's what we are looking at. And I can come back with the general manager and provide an update on that within a month or 2 months.
Mr. Giancarlo, and then I had one question.
Yeah, just to follow on to Ms. Bowser's initial question. As I recall, over the years, you've actually indicated at previous briefings that you've actually made some outreach at the schools themselves.
Yes.
presentations, certainly whether we call it Civics 101 or something like that.
Right.
And I recall, didn't you say you also wanted to work with PTA groups as well?
Yeah,
to
we
try to get to the parents and others about the types of behavior you're witnessing.
Right. We've had a concerted effort of, in particular, Wilson, Deal, those types of schools that over the years we have gone up, worked with the PTA. We've worked with prior years' radio stations, and we had a program called Operation Respect. And when we saw a young person doing something that we thought was admirable, we would give him or her, at the time it was a Blockbusters card to get a video or something. So we think that there's a variety of different efforts that collectively, not just internal to Metro, but sort of embracing the whole jurisdictional region, that I think that we can do that will sort of have an impact on the young people.
I always thought that, I think I volunteered for this a number of years ago, you should have a video of older folks like me raising a cane, yelling and screaming at each other. Just old folks on a Metro stop and a Metro rail, and then kids to young adults sitting there and saying, boy, these old folks, you know, or something like that. I'd always thought that would be an interesting public service announcement. And I did volunteer for that.
You volunteered for that. Okay.
But, you know, that's the difference. That's the difference. The conduct in many of our outlying jurisdictions, if the conduct is unacceptable on a bus, usually is the relationship with the school, the parents, and that young person, and that is resolved. Well, when it sort of impinges on WMATA, there is not that, you know, correlation. We don't have that relationship. And I know in cities such as Dallas, they have that relationship that should you act up in a bad way on public transit, then there's a relationship already established with that particular school system that prevents that person from participating in a lot of different things. And I talked to the chief of police out there, James Spiller, and is working very well. But it takes a combined effort of working with the school and the transit agency.
One more question, Chief. One of our counterpart agencies on the West Coast has recently experienced significant civil disturbance focused on their stations, and I just want to ask whether we have a contingency plan, which I hope we never would have to exercise, to deal with that kind of a condition. And one thing they particularly did not do well was they arrested the media.
Well, we have a contingency plan that all of all Northern Virginia police departments, whether it's Arlington County, Alexandria, Airport Authority, the Metro Transit Police, City of Fairfax, that's part of their curriculum, dealing with crowds and disturbances. So it's generic. It's not specific to a particular group. It's just calling upon those resources. And should that happen here, we would rely heavily on the assistance of that particular jurisdictional law enforcement agencies to help. I don't think that what happened in Bot is something that would happen here under the leadership that we have as to sort of turning something off with the understanding that that's going to impact the gathering of people. I don't think that we would do that here. I don't think that we would arrest the media unless the media is violating the law. So, I mean, it wouldn't be now's my time to get the media and lock them up. So.
Well, we do have thinking through things like. But for example, would we be prepared to make the decisions about closing stations?
Oh, if there's some justifiable reason, whether it's an emergency, a man-made emergency, a disaster, a terrorist threat, we are prepared, working with the general manager, working with Dave Kubitschek, working with our bus. We do it now on a programmable basis when we have work shutdown. So when we shut down a portion of the system, we develop workarounds and bus bridges and things of that nature. So it would be an extension of that type of work.
Are there other questions for the Chief? No? Thank you for being here. We'll see you again. Yes. Next quarter. Yep.
It's on the subsequent agenda. Safety and security. We do have a regular, I'm first confirming that we have a quarterly review from Mr. Doherty about, Mr. Doherty's report. Is a quarterly report?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and it's in November this time?
Yeah, and next month we have the Oversight Committee with theirs, although if there are any safety issues that come up out of that cycle, Mr. Doherty would ask for time on the agenda.
I'm a firm believer, ultimately, in tying specific performance to the budget cycle. It would be helpful to have, particularly on safety, because a number of the safety performance criteria depends on the allocation of capital resources for improving the safety environment itself. Some discussion, perhaps at the November meeting, on how to integrate the planning process for the 13 budget around the safety performance measures and the interrelationship between the investments we make and expected outcomes. We have an annual cycle on performance measures, and ultimately I think it has to be measured around how we make the budget investments. And to start that process, I can't think of any place more important than safety. And since this is our first shot at a multi-year budget, I think it's even more important.
And on the capital side, virtually everything that's being spent is safety-oriented.
I know.
State of good repair. But the operating budget has its considerations as well. So taking it up in November ahead of the cycle sounds like a super idea.
And I just want to add to that, not only in the safety and security area, what we're trying to do, and I'm in the midst of it now, is trying to relate proposed expenditures for things that we don't do now and how that will relate to whether it's a safety improvement, a security improvement, on-time performance improvement. It's not easy, I'll tell you that. But that's the way we're trying to do it on a programmatic basis, so you should see that coming out, not only for this area.
So we'd be in a position to make informed judgments about what we might expect as results.
That's what I'm shooting for.
Thank you.
Mr. Downey.
Yes,
I do just a suggestion, and I'm kind of kicking off of what Mr. Giancola mentioned in jest, but I think quite rightly that, and this is a concern of mine that I'll continue to raise about the school security and the children riding Metro, that we've been talking about it as a police issue strictly, and perhaps we should be talking about it as a marketing and education issue, and perhaps your committee and Mr. Downs can figure out how we can put, you know, have the marketing and education focus brought to the board as well.
And a relationship with the school management side.
Yes, but I do think it also speaks to Ms. Hampshire Cohen's comment that if while we're educating the children in the schools, we're also telling the other members of the riding public that we care about this issue, and we're working on this issue, and we're trying to re-educate our young riders about how to behave on transit. Thank you.
Any else? If not, we'll call the, adjourn the Safety Committee meeting, and we'll move on to our strategic plan effort. Okay.